Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we talk houseplants with you. Houseplants, of course, make a great addition to any room, but sometimes it's hard to find plants that will do well in low light. Well, our guest on Garden Talk today can help you find those plants. Lisa Eldred Steinkopf, with us by phone today. She's known as the houseplant guru. Her new book is called Grow in the Dark, How to Choose and Care for Low-Light Houseplants. So do you need help finding a plant for low-light areas, or maybe you're having problems with one of your houseplants or more than one? I hope you'll give us a call. Number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Lisa Eldred Steinkopf, welcome. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. This is exciting, talking about houseplants.
It's always exciting for me as well. How did you become the houseplant guru?
You know what? My dear friend Nancy Zerlag is the writer for the garden writer for the Free Press and News here in Detroit, and she knew me, so she's like, if she had houseplant questions, she would ask me, and she just started calling me. I asked my houseplant guru, Lisa Steinkopf, and I'm like, okay, I'll take that.
Well, why not? Why not? Will you? Your book, I really have enjoyed going through it. It's wonderful. I learned quite a bit. And one of the things that you talk about in the book is why houseplants are beneficial to our lives.
Yes, they're therapy. You know, there's nothing like grooming a plant and, you know, making sure it's clean and it has everything it needs and watering it. To me, it's therapy. But also they're cleaning the air. They're improving your mood. You're supposed to lower your blood pressure. We could all use that, right?
Yeah. Yes. So and cleaning the air, that was interesting. I bet your air in your house is clean because you have 1,000 houseplants?
You know what? I'll be honest with you. I've never counted. my husband counted the first floor one day, and I think 300. And that includes the second story, and then I have a sunroom that you can't walk in. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to know because then I'd have to admit it. But I assume there's a few hundred in here, yes.
And you have cats. I have cats. And okay. I have a lot of problems with Tiger and Coco when it comes to houseplants. How do you keep cats away from 1,000 houseplants?
Well, let me tell you what. I can eat my words because so many people have asked me. I used to have two kitties. And they both, unfortunately, passed away this spring within a week of each other. I was devastated. And I decided not to get any more, but I never had any problems. They didn't touch my plants. I think they were just surrounded. You know, and I got them as older cats. They were rescue cats. And then I got little Henry. Henry's my new kitty. I got him in around Memorial Day because I just couldn't live without a kitty. And he is a monster. And I am eating every word about, oh, my cats don't eat any plants. This cat, he brings me leaves of my one peperomia. Thank goodness it's not poisonous. To play fetch with him, he likes to play fetch with like the rings from the milk jugs. Well, now he brings me plant leaves and expects me to play fetch with him, and I'm just like so. And he knocks plants over. I clean up dirt at least once a day. I just like, oh my goodness. But hopefully he's gonna realize he's surrounded and there's nothing he can do, and they won't be interesting to him anymore. I'm hoping.
Well, you better hope. In the meantime, I think you should change his name from Henry to Hank. He sounds more like a Hank.
Yeah.
You know the nickname for Henry, Hank.
Yes, he's just a brat. Well, you know, we rescued him from, my daughter's friend rescued him off of Jefferson Avenue in Detroit. He was running across that's about downtown Detroit. It's about 6 or 7 lanes of traffic. And he had a broken leg, he had a broken tail, but we took him in, and I was going to name him Jefferson, but, you know, it's hard to call a little kitty, you know, like, but so he's really named after Henry Ford for, you know, Bill Detroit, giving him some Detroit kudos because he's Henry.
Well, and that's 2 syllables, so that's good. 2 syllables, yeah. I've been told, are good for cats and dogs.
Yes, he's cute, but boy, is he's something else.
Well, I'm sure today on the show we're going to get some questions about sick houseplants, I'm an almost bet. But what generally leads to a houseplant's demise?
Well, there's a few things. Number one, you have to figure out what kind of light you have and put your plant that you have in the correct light. Because if you buy a high light plant and put it in low light, it's going to live for a little while, but it's going to slowly decline. So find the right place. But then I think it's either overwatering or underwatering. They just can't quite figure it out. Am I giving it too much? Am I not giving it enough? So I really do think it might be watering.
Well, I think you might be right on that. But let's talk about your book itself, A Grow in the Dark. So first, why did you put it together? I bet you get a lot of questions about that.
Well, you know, I had written my first book, and I think it was the copy editor. She was a young, we're going to say millennial because she is, that worked on the first book with me. She's like, you know what? I have gotten so interested in houseplants by working on your book. And she goes, but you know what? I have no light in my apartment. Why don't you do a book on low-light plants? And I'm like, okay. So it wasn't my idea. I'm not going to say it was. But it was a great idea. And they picked out the name. And I'm like, that's kind of cool. Grow in the dark. Nothing grows in the dark, people. Don't play on words, remember. Glow in the dark. Grow in the dark. It's just low-light houseplants. Not no-light houseplants.
There are some things that you have to put in the dark. There are some plants, like poinsettias, if you want them to save them and get them to rebloom, right?
That is true. But that is funny. I'm on a lot of houseplant Facebook pages, and some people are like, oh, I put my poinsettia in the closet for the next couple months, and I'm like, oh, no. Every plant needs light. That's how it lives. That's how it eats. That's how it works. So you're going to have to, you have to put it in the closet 14 hours a day, or under a box or something, but don't just put it in the closet and forget about it because it won't be alive when you bring it out.
But, what always bothered me about that was if somebody accidentally opens up the door in the middle of the 14 hours, then you got to start all over again.
You got to start all over again. But you know what I tell people, and I just wrote a blog post about it, is that it's, even if you never get it to bloom, or, turn color because it's not, those are the bracts, the modified leaves that turn color. Even if that never happens again, it is a beautiful houseplant. It has oak-shaped leaves. It has red petioles. It really is a beautiful houseplant.
Yeah, and when it's a good, healthy green, they look great.
They are. They're beautiful. And if you give them what they need, and if it turns a little bit of color for you again, yay, but if it doesn't, it's like I said, it's a beautiful houseplant.
How do you keep them from getting, they get kind of leggy, or they can get leggy?
Yes, I've read, and this is what other people have told me they've done. I really don't keep them. I have so many things in this house that one more plant is not what I need. But is that you cut it, when it starts looking leggy, and maybe you underwatered it or overwatered, and it's dropped some leaves, and it's not looking that great after Christmas, then you cut it down to 6 inches. And then it will flush back out, and it will be nice and bushy and beautiful.
So you have to, cut it 6 inches, but you need to leave some leaves there, too.
Well,
Or do you just cut it down to the stems?
Yeah, you can cut it to back, and then it will, as long as it's not standing in water or it's not dry as a bone, it's going to flush back out.
Oh, well, all right, there you go. Some good tips right there. I'm sure there are a few poinsettias around this time of the year. Pat in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Pat.
Hello. So your recommendation about proper lighting through various windows makes total sense. I have a question about the kinds of glass that are now in, some windows, and actually I think in most windows now are low E, they call it, low E emissivity glass that sort of filters out some of the like ultraviolet radiation or certain kinds of rays. So does that impede the benefits to the plant? Does it cut out certain important wavelengths? Because it's very common now in new windows to have low E inerted glass.
Yep.
Well,
what do you think, Lisa?
I would assume, I have a 1966 house, so I'm not sure, but I do have newer windows, but I'm not really sure. My plants are all doing really well, so I can't honestly tell you that I know what that does to plants.
If I'm remembering this correctly, I think the low E glass is still let through the rays, the part of the rays that actually help the plants. That's right. What somebody told me. So,
that's a great question. I'm gonna look more into that because I hadn't even considered it. Mine are all just doing well, so I hadn't thought about these new windows.
I think those rays still come through the low E glass. Thanks, Pat. Appreciate it. Well, somebody else will call in. Listen, we have some great gardeners who listen to the show, and I'm betting that somebody else calls at 1-800-642-1234, or they email us at ideas@wpr.org and let us know about that. And, of course, if you have a question, you can use that same email or you can use that same phone to give us a call. Heidi and Hubertus, let's go to you. Hi, Heidi.
Hi, it's nice talking to you.
Nice talking with you.
Oh, thank you. I have just purchased two amaryllis bulbs, and I'm wondering what the best lighting is for those and how the watering should be handled. Do they like lots of water or not so much water?
Well, the first thing is you're gonna plant it in a pot that is only a little bit bigger than the bulb, right? And you're going to let a third of that or maybe about a third of the bulb is going to be out of the above the soil line.
Okay.
And then you're gonna water it until water runs out the bottom once you plant it, and then you're not gonna water it again unless it's totally dry. But you're not gonna water it, but it will start sprouting. You're not gonna start watering it again until it's got some green on it, and you know that the roots are using that water to grow your plant. And then you're gonna keep it in a nice bright window. And of course you're gonna have to, when it starts growing that flower stalk, you may have to turn it every day. Because it's going to bend toward the light. It's amazing. I think if you probably stood there and watched it long enough, you could maybe see it do that. It seems like you have to turn it once or twice a day once it gets going.
So, Heidi, does that help?
It does. Thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Jim in Milwaukee, we'll go to you. Hi, Jim.
Hi. First of all, happy holidays to both of you.
To you as well.
Thank you.
Based on all the conversation that you've had, Larry, I've purchased a lime and a lemon tree.
Good for you.
I've heard so many stories about how much fruit they produce. I had to try it. So it's my first year having them, and I'm getting the little buds coming out. And I know you said to pinch those off for the first couple of years. Mm-hmm. But on my lemon tree, I noticed that there's underneath the leaf, there's a little bit of a white, like spider web looking thing. And I don't know if there's something what I can put on there so I don't harm the plant, but I can get rid of that.
So what do you think, Lisa?
Sounds like you might have some spider mites.
That's what I was thinking.
So you need to, if it's on all of the leaves and you can see it, that means it's kind of progressed along quite well. So you need, number one, you need to raise the humidity around your plants. That's what spider mites, if it's dry, when those heaters come on, it's like a little dinner bell rings and all the spider mites just rush for your plants. So put it on a pebble tray or, and I would take it to, if you can get it to the shower, maybe really give it a good rinse and take your shower head and do the underneath of the leaves and then see what happens. After you wipe it all down, because I know you don't want to, you're going to eat those lemons, you don't want to spray anything on it. Or you could use neem oil. Neem oil is a pretty natural product, and it's a miticide and an insecticide, miticide, fungicide.
Yeah, I think I would bet a lot of money that it's spider mites. And so that moisture part of it, Jim, I think that's really. That's really good advice there from Lisa. I like the idea of putting them in a shower. Could you get yours in the shower?
Yes. They're only about 2 or about 3 feet tall, maybe, and they're pretty spindly yet. So,
yeah, give them a nice gentle.
And somebody called last week and talked about where they can find them, and I won't give the name of the place, but there's a garden center on Watertown Plank Road in Milwaukee that was selling them as soon as 2 weeks ago.
Lemon trees?
So Lemon and lime. It was a variegated lemon and a lime tree.
Do you know what's really cool is the leaves are variegated, but the lemons are variegated, too. I mean, the lemon rind is also.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Because we have one at Belle Isle Conservatory here in Detroit, and the lemons are variegated just like the leaves.
Well, they are a lot of fun, I can tell you that. And I've got some good use for the limes that I have on Limey, my lime tree, that I'm going to put to use on this holiday weekend, as a matter of fact. I have a few big ones and a few small ones on the way up. So, Jim, good luck with that. Thank you so much. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. Goodbye now.
Bye. Well, you know, Tom in Viroqua has an answer on the low E glass, I believe. So let's go there. Tom, hi.
Yes. Good morning. I'm speaking to you from the perspective of a building scientist who, you know, has research and understands window performance, not so much as a agriculturalist. But the problem is there's no such thing as just a single low E glass. There are, for any one glass manufacturer, there may be a dozen different varieties on that, and they really should be selected depending on the orientation, where in the country it's located, because in some cases, you know, you just want different things from your glass. That being said, almost any of your high-performance low-E glasses, although they're designed primarily to stop the long-wave heat transmission, they also block off a lot of the other transmissions. So maybe if you look at the overall transmission through a low E window, they can be as low as 30 or 35%, which means, you know, the overall light that's coming in, which will, you know, affect the plant, is can be largely diminished. So you really have to ask your salesperson, if they even understand these things, to you know, to get you a full specs on the particular window they're recommending, and look at the overall light transmission through the glass.
Very well done, Tom. Thank you very much.
I don't think I want new windows. That's all.
Well, you can get some windows that may cheat toward the kind of emissions that you are looking for. I appreciate that, Tom. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have with us today on Garden Talk Lisa Eldred Steinkopf. She is the author of, she writes a lot for a lot of magazines and publications. Her book is a new book out, Grow in the Dark, How to Choose and Care for Low-Light Houseplants. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at how to choose and care for low-light houseplants, we're zeroing in a bit on that, but we can take some other houseplant questions as well as we visit with Lisa Eldred Steinkopf, author of Grow in the Dark. And Karen in Galena, Illinois, has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I have a question about fertilizer for ferns. I have a fern that is, I've had it for quite a few years. Used to give it I don't even know what I was giving it, but I haven't done that for a while. Maybe I need to get back. Is there a specific, how can I ask this? Are there each fern specific to a different kind of fertilizer? So in other words, I need to know what kind of fern to have.
Okay.
Oh. I just fertilize all my houseplants with, well, I guess I do sometimes use an orchid. If I have some orchids, I'll use an orchid fertilizer. But as a rule, I just use a 20-20-20 all-purpose. I use Jex Classic fertilizer, or sometimes I'll use fish emulsion. So I don't really think there's any fertilizer you specifically need to use just for ferns.
No, I don't think so either.
You've answered my question. Goodbye.
Bye. Thanks a lot for calling. And the fish emulsion, that's pretty much all I give my lime tree. Limey is every time I water, I give it some fish emulsion. Limey seems to do pretty darn well. Let's go to Steve in Sun Prairie next. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, hi, this is Steve.
What's on your mind?
Well, hey, I just want to talk about, I have a, and check me out if I think I have my facts correct, but I have a Christmas cactus that belonged to my grandmother's mother, Wilhelmina, originally. So that would date it back to the 1890s on the original genetic stock. Is that possible, first of all?
Yes.
And it's a beautifully blooming old cactus, Christmas cactus.
Well, and you're saying, yes, it is, Lisa, and I would agree with you.
Yes, they can live for hundreds, you know, at least 100 years. It's obviously lived longer than that. So, and, you know, people pass those around to their family members, and really the true Christmas cactus, it's, you know, you can't usually find that in to buy unless someone had a, you know, they propagate plants and they had a, you know, a grandma or an uncle or whatever that had a piece of it. So, yeah, that's very cool.
So, from Steve's perspective, if he wanted to ensure that that stock continues, how do you grow a new one from what you've got already?
So when I wait till it's, you know, done blooming, and then you might want to trim it, because every place that you trim it where there was one flower, if you trim that off, then it will send out two new segments, and then you will have two flowers the next year. So, but if you want to propagate it, take those segments, and I would make sure I had maybe, you know, a good three, at least three or so segments together. I'd let it dry for maybe a week, let it callus, and then you're just going to, you know, because you want the end to callus over with any succulent or cactus. And then you're going to, you know, stick it in a pot of, you know, potting medium that's kind of moistened, and it should start growing roots. And
That's what I love about those succulents. I mean, I've done that with cactus, different cactus plants, and you just, you know, whack off a chunk and let it dry, and a week or so. I've even forgotten sometimes, and it's gone beyond a week, but you stick it in the potting soil, and there it goes.
Yes, and then, you know, if you have that, and you have, you know, maybe some, well, not only children, but maybe nieces and nephews, that'd be a great Christmas gift to give them something that was, I love sentimental plants. I have my mom's fern that was my great-grandmother's fern, so I love that, and I think a lot of, you know, especially kids love plants again today. So if you give them a piece of that was their great-great-great-grandmother's, that's awesome.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So there you go, Steve. You got your holiday gifts taken care of right there, and it won't cost you very much.
Go buy some potting. So, all right.
and some pots. you go. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call. A couple lines open for you at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Sue in Eau Claire. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering how to get an orchid to rebloom. I've had it for over a year. It's had new leaves come on. Sends out just the stem shooter things off to the sides, but it doesn't do anything to rebloom. What should I do with it?
What kind? Do you know what kind you have?
No, I don't. Other than that, it was a small purple and white flower.
Well, let's assume, but we should never assume. You can always send me a picture of the plant, and maybe I would definitely know if it was a Phalaenopsis or the moth orchid, which is the most common orchid. It's almost, I think it's second now only to poinsettias in sales, right? So it kind of treats like an African violet. It kind of likes that soft morning light. It doesn't need to be in full sun. So to me, if something's not blooming, it's been a year, so it should at least rebloom within a year, then it needs to have a little bit more light. That would be my thoughts, because the only thing that can make a plant bloom is light.
So if you can get some, if you can get it to a window with more light, or add some grow light type conditions to it, that's going to help, you're saying.
Right. Yes, but you know, it really doesn't, they don't need a ton of light, but also, you know, those kind of orchids that are growing, usually they're either growing in some kind of bark, or they're growing in, you know, some kind of sphagnum peat moss.
Yeah.
That needs to be changed, completely changed out, taken all the old, taken off the roots, the brown roots cut away, because there will be some, because everything's aging, at least every 2 years. So if you haven't done that in a while, that could be the problem as well. You just take a repot and some...
Yeah, a repot wouldn't... is this the time to do it, though?
Well, you know, if it's not blooming. But I would probably wait till spring now. You know, because it may surprise you and send out one of those things that you looks like a root, maybe may start heading up and be a stem.
Yeah, I'd hold on till spring, and then if you're not seeing anything in spring, then that's when I would do it anyway.
Yeah.
Sue, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's go to Becky and Ladysmith next.
Hi. Thank you. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for taking my call. I've learned so much listening to your show already this morning. I have a question about lime trees.
Okay.
You mentioned it a couple of times. My boyfriend's had this lime tree for almost 10 years, maybe 8 to 10 years. And he said there's never been a lime grown on it. No, it hasn't produced any limes, and he's about to throw it out. How can I rescue this tree and get it to help it make some limes?
Well, Lisa, I've got some ideas, but about
you? You have limey, so you probably know more about it than I do. I don't have a lime tree. I'm always saying, once again, if it's not, the reason it doesn't have any fruit is because it's not blooming, and if it's not blooming, that means it doesn't have enough light.
And the other thing I would add is fertilizing. They need some fertilizer to bloom. Does it ever bloom?
Nope. No. Just lots of leaves. And thank you about the spider mites. We have spider mites, so I'm going to go home and put it in the shower. But how do I get bloom?
I would if he rarely fertilizes it. I fertilize limey every time I water it, so which is usually about once a week, with fish emulsion. But there are also some fertilizer that are specifically for citrus, and if he doesn't have that, he probably should. And I know another guest on the show was having problems with hers, and I recommended more fertilizing, and then I had her back on the show about a year later. She said, you were right. I got a lot of limes. So light
heavy feeders is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yep. So I would, I'd more fertilizer and more light.
Hey, great. Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed the show.
All right.
Have a good Christmas.
You as well, Becky. Thank you. Well, let's go to Peggy in Madison. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I have a question. I live in a condo that faces west. It's a bit of a cave. I love the space, but it really is dark. I'm sitting in the living room right now without lights on, and even though it's daytime, it's kind of dark because it only has that west exposure, and it has some blockage from a back porch and trees and things like that. Is there anything that would do particularly well in a space that has that minimal of light, or should I not put any plant through that?
You know, there's a plant called a ZZ plant, because if you can read...
I was just thinking of that.
Yeah, if you can read in that light comfortably, you should be able to grow a plant. If you can't, then you might need some supplemental lights, some kind of like maybe a, you know, some kind of a grow light. But a ZZ plant is... very can take extremely low light. I'm impressed how low it can go. And then you would also, it doesn't need a ton of water because it has some really fleshy roots. So it's kind of a good plant, low light, don't have to water it a lot. I would try that.
I loved how you put that in your book. You said if you've got a spot where nothing grows, put in a ZZ plant.
I tell people when I do my talks, you could practically grow in the closet, but nothing's going to grow in the closet. Don't put it in the closet. But I always make sure that no one really believes me. But it really is can take some very low light.
Although you do say that, it'll probably work a little better if it's got some light at least.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The thing I like to like about them, and in looking in your book, which has a wonderful picture of a ZZ And it's just the letter Z twice, ZZ plant. It's a beautiful plant. And even in low light, it looks beautiful.
Yeah, it really is a very shiny, has really shiny dark green leaves. And it's kind of almost, it's really architectural. It's really a pretty plant.
Yeah. So there you go, Peggy. Does that help?
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
It does. Thank you very much. I'll go look for that.
ZZ. And as you say in the book, in your book, they are have become a lot more popular.
Yes. They're still kind of, they're not horror. I mean, there's a new one that's black, actually. It's called Raven. It's just hitting the United States market now. But they used to be pretty pricey, but I think they've kind of come down in price. But they grow pretty slow. So that's why they're a little more expensive.
Betty in Dubuque, Iowa. We'll go to you next. Hi, Betty.
Hello. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm listening. I always enjoy your program. We just moved to Iowa from the West Coast. We've had many poinsettias throughout the years. I am not successful in keeping them alive. My question is, you've talked about how they make lovely houseplants. Mm-hmm. What's the trick? What's the secret? What do I need to do?
Well, the thing with poinsettias is a lot of people, well, number one, they're in that, if you're bringing them home, they're in that sleeve, right? So the first thing to do is either, if you're going to water it in that sleeve, I suggest you take it out of the sleeve, take it to the sink, water it, put it back in the sleeve, and then put it back. Because so many times you go to the store, and they're already standing in water. You lift it up, and you can just tell. I leave it, and I walk away if it's standing in water. But they need to be evenly moist. They don't want to be really cold. I mean, they're from Mexico, so they want to be warm. And they want to be in a warm area, but not with any air blasting on them either, because they have really thin leaves, and they kind of dry out quickly. So you just want to keep it evenly moist, kind of raise the humidity around it, and that's about all I can tell you. And give it some good light.
Yeah, what kind of pot works best for a poinsettia, in your opinion?
Well, because they, you know, like I said, they kind of have thin leaves, I would probably put it, it can be okay in clay, but it would be nice in a, like a glazed ceramic pot.
All right. Betty, does that help?
You should repot it then. Is that the, because they come in, you know, like a plastic thing or something.
Right. Yeah, I would do that. And sometimes, you know, I'm not sure how fabulous the soil is they come in either. So, you know, add some, or maybe replace some of the soil with some better.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll try it and see. Thanks
all right.
very much.
Thanks, Betty.
Program.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Open lines get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. A question about your houseplants, or you want a recommendation for a houseplant? I hope you'll join in. Email us as well at ideas@wpr.org. Karen had sent a photo of a cyclamen. You won't be able to see it, Lisa, but it was doing great outside all summer and fall on the north side of her porch. It's now on her kitchen counter with indirect light from a south-facing windows. Now the leaves are starting to curl around the edges, and it looks leggy and sick.
Oh.
So a cyclamen.
Curl around the edges. Does that maybe indicate maybe cyclamen mites or something? You know how I know that when African violets get mites in the center.
Yeah.
Their leaves curl under and they get hard. So I'm wondering if she has a problem like that. Without seeing it, I don't really know.
But is there any other reason the leaves would start to curl? Would it be too little water?
Well, I think that if it gets too little water or too much water, they kind of just yellow and fall off. I've never really actually seen one curl up. I mean, because they're kind of thick leaves, I've really never seen one curl under. That's why I'm wondering if it might have some kind of insect or something that's deforming the leaves.
Yeah, that could be. Is this another one where you, with a cyclamen, could you put that in the shower or not?
Well, I mean, you don't, the thing with cyclamen is I tell people, number one, they like to be cool. So
yeah.
If you brought it in from outside and in the, you know, anywhere near a heat vent, they're going to react because they really do like a cool area. But, and they also, you know, go dormant. So maybe it's just going dormant. Usually they're dormant in the summer, though.
Yeah, they're usually dormant in summer. I would think it's possible, although in Wisconsin we tend to keep our home's a little cooler than normal just because of the winter weather. But if it's if it's near a heat source, that could be a real issue, as you say. That could be a real issue as well.
And they probably could have. I mean, they could certainly get spider mites as well. I just was wondering if, because it said they were kind of curling,
yeah,
more going on.
Yeah, there you go. Andy in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Andy.
Hello, Larry. How are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I'm good. I'm calling about philodendron cutting. We had put some philodendrons in glass jars and vases, and they set root, and they're hanging out. It's been a couple years. How long do they live that way?
I can tell you now, you know, the hydroponic, buying house plants in little, you know, jars of water was kind of big. I don't even know how many years ago. I have some snake plants, which is really cool because they're succulents, in water, and I've had them for probably, oh, gosh, at least 10 or 15 years, if not longer. And they're just growing in water. So, really a plant can, as long as you're giving it, you know, changing the water, giving it some, you still would need some fertilizer. I think it'd probably go just as long as it would in soil.
Yeah, I think you're right. Do you fertilize it, Andy, at all?
Yeah, we fertilize it every couple weeks.
Yeah?
Just change the water and give it fresh fertilizer and water.
Well, it's going to last a long time.
It's going to last a real long time. Yeah.
And then is there any way to go back into soil, or do they stay hydroponic forever then?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is that soil roots and water roots are kind of different. So it might react a little bit if you put it in soil now, but you still probably could. I mean, lots of people do it. But it could stay hydroponic for forever.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, well, that answers the question. Thanks.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate the call. Lisa Eldred Steinkopf, our guest today. She is the author of Grow in the Dark, How to Choose and Care for Low-Light Houseplants. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller with my guest, Lisa Eldred Steinkopf, author of Grow in the Dark, How to Choose and Care for Low-Light Houseplants. Great to have her with us. You can join in too, by the way. 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And before I forget about it, if you have some children or maybe some grandchildren visiting on Christmas Eve or with you on Christmas Eve, you should be sure to tune in the show, because Santa Claus comes every year, usually, you know, 5 out of 7 years, comes on Christmas Eve with an elf or with his wife, Mrs. Claus, and we only take calls from children. And children can call in and tell Santa Claus what they want for Christmas. So that's our tradition. It's been going on for years and years and years, and I wouldn't miss it for the world. I had to miss it 1 year when I was deathly ill, but other than that, I've been with Santa Claus, and we always have a lot of fun. And even if you don't have a youngster, just listening to what Santa and the youngsters talking is worth the price of admission for sure. So that's on next Tuesday on Christmas Eve. Back to gardening. Let's go to James in Milwaukee. Hi, thank you for calling, James.
Hi there. What I wondered about is the different light requirements when you're propagating plants, in particular succulents, but, you know, any leaf cutting. Should they start out when they're under, you know, like in a plastic bag, should they start out with really low light, and then as soon as they're transplanted, a lot more, or what's the pattern of light?
Well, I would say that whatever plant you're propagating should be in the same light that the original plant was in. So if it's a succulent, it would be in, I wouldn't put it, I guess if it's a succulent, you wouldn't put it in a plastic bag anyway. So, I would keep it in the same light that it would normally be in.
Okay.
Because if you put it in lower light, it's going to, it's not going to do well.
Yep. There you
Until
go.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for calling. And Rebecca in Madison will turn to you next. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. I have, I think it's pronounced Justina, D-R-A-C-A-E-N-A. It looks kind of like it has leaves of like a corn plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's over 20 years old, and it's probably close to 8 feet tall. I inherited it from my mom, who passed away a couple years ago, and it did fine. It grew more because my ceilings were a little higher than hers. But about 2 months ago, the leaves started turning yellow, and the soil got mushy wet. I stopped. I haven't watered it probably for 6 to 8 weeks, and the soil is still damp, and the leaves just keep crinkling up and dying. So there's just a few of those leaves at the very top of this really tall plant, and leaves, there's a little baby that sprouted up at the bottom of the pot, and most of, well, the bottom leaves of the little baby are now crinkled up and brown. They're like maybe 8 leaves of the baby at the top that are green and look like the regular plant. But the big tall one is just, I don't know what to do with it.
Does it have the canes, like, you know, like those big woody canes? Is it a corn plant? Okay.
Yep, so, it's a big woody cane thing.
Well, no, they do not want to be wet. So I'm wondering if, because it's an older plant and you haven't, maybe if you haven't transplanted it, if somehow the drainage hole has got, you know, because it's staying so wet now, maybe the drainage hole became clogged, which I've seen happen on plants that haven't been repotted in, you know, a long, long, long time. Because once they start getting wet, their canes will start kind of rotting, and then all those leaves are going to keep, they're going to keep falling off and turning yellow.
So you think I could just pull it out of the pot? I read somewhere that they don't like being moved and repotted, but you think it's time, huh?
Well, at this point, if
yeah.
it's still wet, I would you got to do something, because if it stays too wet like that, and it's been wet too long, those canes will rot. And then if that cane at the bottom feels mushy, then it's probably
too late.
Too late. Thank you for saying that. I hate to say things like that, since it was mom's plant.
Well, I haven't watered it for probably at least 2 months, and
it's still wet?
I mean, and it's dry air. The soil still isn't dried out.
Because the roots aren't using the water. The plant's not using the water.
Yeah, the roots are dying.
It sounds like the roots may already have gone if they're not. And really, those are very shallow-rooted, those canes. I worked at a plant, you know, a place where we took care of plants. So I went into offices, and they always had those. And we always had to, they always were, you know, they'd lean over, and we'd really have to compact the soil to get them to stand up straight. And they just have really shallow root systems, and you have to be careful with that. And then overwatering. They do not want to be too wet.
So, I hardly didn't water it much anyway, but yeah, I wonder why it just suddenly started. But
roots just aren't. Yeah, and there may be some junk coming out of. You know, you're going to have some dead roots when you pull that plant up. And I'm Lisa. That those should be trimmed, right?
Yes, definitely. Anything that's not, you know, firm, it's mushy, it doesn't smell good, it's the wrong color compared to the other roots, then I would cut it off.
Yeah, and you've got nothing to lose, Rebecca.
Yeah, right.
I'm wondering if it is mushy at the bottom. If you keep going up and then it starts to get hard, maybe at the top where there's leaves, you may be able to just cut that off where it's still, you know, still a good cane, because there's nothing else really you can do. Kind of, and then it might, you know, stick it back in some moist potting soil, not that soil, some new soil, and it may reroot itself.
Oh, it's a great idea.
That's all they do. They cut those canes. They stick them in pots and wait for them to sprout. That's how they sell them.
The canes right now, they are not mushy at all.
No.
Okay. Well, good.
Good.
So let's see if we can. I might even at this, if it's still moist, I might repot it at this. You know, just
do it right now.
Soil. Yeah.
Yeah. And corn plant, the corn plant is one of the plants that you feature in your book.
Yes, because it does take pretty, Dracaenias are very good low-light plants.
Yeah, they do well in low light conditions, and they're very pretty as well. They're nice to look at.
Yeah.
So there you go, Rebecca. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Mike, well, let's see. I'm sorry. Dot in Chippewa Falls. We'll go to you next. Hi, Dot.
Hi. I have a question for you.
Okay.
I have a Hindu rope plant. Another name for it is Hoya. And yeah. I want to know, it's very long, very big. I want to know the special care for it, like fertilizing, how often to water, and how you clean it up.
So you've obviously had a long time because it's really long, correct?
Yes, yes.
And it's doing well. Does it bloom for you?
Yeah. Once in a while, yes.
Oh, that's awesome. So you have it in good light.
Well,
I
have it on a south window.
Yeah, that's perfect. Mine's in the south window all the time, too. It sounds like you're doing a great job. I don't know if I would do anything different.
Yeah. Do you fertilize yours?
I do. You know, and I just use either that, either a, you know, a 20-20-20 fertilizer or some kind of, like, fish emulsion or kelp or something. But I wouldn't do it, you know, not this time of year. I don't water and I don't fertilize any of my houseplants unless they're under lights from, you know, October through whenever you see some new growth again. It could be, depending on our weather, it could be February, end of February. It could be March. It could be April. As they start sending out new leaves, you can start fertilizing.
Okay, and then can you tell me a good way to clean it up?
Well, I know there is, with all those little crinkles, it's kind of hard. I probably would just take it to the shower. And even if it doesn't need water, because, you know, if you know, maybe it's already, because I don't water mine that often, you could still, you know, hang it someplace, maybe hang it on the shower head and just wash the leaves, you know, really rinse them good.
And you wash yours, like, I mean, you water yours like once a week?
Well, I don't, because it's a succulent, so I don't water it once a week. Unless it's, you know, maybe if it's all sunny days, I might need to water it once a week, but as a rule, I don't. And it's been not very sunny here. I'm in Michigan, so I'm kind of in the same boat you're in, probably.
Yes.
Less light, less water.
Yeah.
It dries out so fast, so I've been having to water at least twice a week.
Oh, my goodness. Maybe it's time to up-pot it.
I would say you might just have a ball of roots there if you have that much, if have to add that much water.
I would say so, too. But I might probably, I think I still would wait till the spring to do that. But you probably could do it now. If you're watering something twice a week, that's a lot. That means it's pretty root-bound.
Repot it?
Repot it. But I would only go up, you know, just a little bit. I wouldn't go, especially at this time of year, I'd only go up like an inch-sized pot, so like a 4-inch to a 6-inch or a 6 to an 8.
Well, that's going to be a hard one to repot because it's long, long, long.
Yeah, it obviously is a very big plant. And what size pot do you think it's in right now?
Oh, if it's just a small pot, probably 6.5 inch.
Oh, yeah, it's time to up-pot that.
Okay.
There
it's
you
a really
go.
Good, I want, but use a really well-drained soil, and then remember that you won't have to water it as much after you up-pot it.
There
you go. You don't want anything to happen to that. That sounds like an amazing plant.
Yeah, it does. Dot, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Mike in Madison, hi.
Hi. So as most aquarium users know, you can use your fish tank water as a great fertilizing source. But most fish tanks also come with a filtration system and these little plastic fiber-covered filters. And you can save those. Don't throw them away. Put them in your plants. I use them on my lime trees and all my tropicals and jades and everything. Take the filters and put them in your plant and water over the top of them, and you'll get months and months of free nutrients out of those filters before you have to send them to the dump.
Huh. Well, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Lisa, are you taking a note on that?
Yeah, I don't have an aquarium, but I might have to find someone who does.
Yeah, that sounds great. Mike, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. It's a kind of tips we often will put on our blog. I should mention, by the way, our blog has lots of stories on lots of topics relating to the show. And if you haven't heard about our blog, you just go to WPR.org/Larry to see what's there. You know, just I know we just put up a story on it's everything from how to jumpstart your car properly if you have a Prius or something like that, to, well, who knows what else. There are a lot of good stories on that blog. And so, again, just go to WPR.org/Larry and the blog. You'll find some information about the blog on the right-hand side of that page. Our guest today is Lisa Eldred Steinkopf, and her book is called Grow in the Dark, How to Choose and Care for Low-Light Houseplants. It's a great book, and enjoying reading it and talking with her. On this edition of Garden Talk, I'm Larry Mueller. We're talking about houseplants today on Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Our guest, Lisa Eldred Steinkopf. She's known as the houseplant guru and has written for HGTVGardens.com, Real Simple Magazine, Michigan Gardener Magazine, Michigan Gardening Magazine, where she writes a monthly column. And her new book is called Grow in the Dark, How to Choose and Care for Low-Light Houseplants. Love to hear from you. Call in with your questions or comments at 800-642-1234 or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Lisa, we have Vicki from Menominee, Michigan waiting online. So let's go to Vicki. Thank you for calling, Vicki.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm calling about a gardenia.
Okay.
And I'm wondering why, no matter what I do, I can't, the leaves turn yellow and the plant will bud, but the buds don't open.
Gardenias and bud drops. It's all about humidity.
Ah.
What I
very high humidity.
How do I have to put it in a plastic bag to maintain the humidity? I mean,
No. You know what's funny is my sister-in-law had one, and she had it. She had a bathroom in a, she had a really old like farmhouse, and it had a bathroom with a really good windows in it, and that thing bloomed its head off because it was in there, and they had four kids, so the bathroom was always being used, and the shower was always going, so the humidity was so high. And it had great light, so it bloomed all the time. But you could put it on a pebble tray, you know, and put, get a saucer that's bigger than the saucer that it's in, fill it with pebbles, fill it with water, and then set your plant in its original saucer back on top of those pebbles and keep it filled with water. You could use a humidifier in the room. And then also make sure that, you know, I was going to say this earlier when someone asked about humidity. All of our heat vents are under the windows, right? Usually.
Yeah.
And where's all our plants? In the windows. So that heat is just blowing right up on your plants. So I go out and I buy these heat, they're air deflectors, and they have little magnets on them. And even if you don't have magnet or, you know, metal vents, they could still sit on top of the vents. And it shoots the air, it directs the air out across the floor instead of letting it go up onto your plants. So that's a huge save right there to not have that hot air blowing directly on your plant.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. But somehow you've got to get that humidity up, or it's going to keep dropping.
We have really high ceilings, and it's a big room that it's in. It's all windows and stuff, so it's getting plenty of light, but it's just trying to keep it from getting yellow and, you know, trying to get it to bloom.
Right, and the yellow leaves, that's usually an indication of either too high of heat, too dry, too wet. You know, you never know unless you check it out and see what's going on, whether it's been getting too wet or letting it get too dry.
Does, you know, in terms of moisture, does it help, Lisa, to mist?
Well, it's been, I think it's kind of been a proven scientific fact that it, you'd have to mist every 15 minutes, 24 hours a day for it to really make a difference. But, you know, if you want to. So I tell people, you know, that it is a soothing thing to do. It, that's part of the plants are therapy thing. So if you want to mist it, yes. But really it just kind of gets water droplets on the leaves and it's not really raising the humidity for any length of time around your plants.
One thing you might do too, Vicki, is get yourself for about $5 or $6 a little device from one of the home stores that tells the humidity in your house. And it may be that you want to raise the humidity level in your house, which you could do. You may have a humidifier attached to your furnace, or you may need to purchase one. If you really want more humidity and you don't, you can't put them in, you can't put the plant in the bathroom, which is a great idea. I would think about that too. Find out what your humidity level is.
You know, if you have a nice window in your kitchen, maybe a, you know, somehow some people have sliding doors near their kitchen and their dining room or something. You know, the humidity is always higher in our kitchen because we're boiling water and we're doing dishes. So
yeah,
that's a good place for them too if it's enough light.
Yeah, there it is. Good luck, Vicki. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. By the way, I haven't asked you this, and I should have right away, but explain how your book is organized and what you've got in it.
Oh, well, it's the first thing I do is I tell people to figure out what kind of light they have. What kind of, you know, do you have low light? Do you have high light? Do you have medium light? Which way does your windows face? Because that's kind of how I set things up. I tell people some plants do better in east, some do better in west, and that's taking into account that you have no, you know, that's assuming you have no overhangs, no, what do you call those, spawning trees that are blocking your light. and then we talk about, you know, and there's really no, there's not a lot of plants that, you know, love low light, but these are ones that are, you know, I don't have the fiddly fig in here, and I don't have any high cactus and succulents. Usually I have a Huarthy in here because that can take lower light, but as a rule, there's some plants you should just steer clear of if you don't have some good bright light.
And then you've got, and then you go on to care and.
Yes, and how to, you know, at climate, atmosphere, which is that talking about air movement. Plants also don't like stagnant air. You know, outside there's breezes blowing. So in my room, where I have my plants under light stands, I have a few plants in there, some African violets. I do have a fan going all the time, and in my sunroom. The ceiling fan is on 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So, and then we talk about maintenance. You need to, you know, you need to wash your plants, and you also need to wash your windows.
Yeah, that was, when I saw that, wash the windows. Yeah, that's a good, really good idea. I have clean windows.
And, it doesn't, it seems like the day you wash them is the day it rains or the next day, but it is better. You know, if you can wash them a couple times a year, it makes a huge difference. I mean, there's so much. And the screens. You know, do you remember when our parents used to take the screens out for the winter? We don't do that anymore. Maybe some people still do. I don't. I don't personally. But they're at least clean your screens if you can. If you want to leave them in, at least clean them because they can block, without even being dirty, can block like 30% of the light because, you know.
Yeah.
You know, one half of your window. If one half has a screen and the other doesn't, one half of the window has way more light than the other side. So,
and then you have a big section with all the various low-light plants that you like to recommend, like the ZZ plant we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of the dracenias take low-light, calatheas, and there's a lot of philodendrons. That's in there.
I love the cast iron plant. I love some of the names of plants anyway, and the cast iron plant kind of appealed to me, that name. And it was popular a long time ago, but it survives in you know, dark and drafty and cold parlors.
That was the original, like, ZZ plant.
Yeah.
The plant that could take the low light. I mean, that was, like, the only plant, you know, plus it can take so they say air pollution, because back in the Victorian times, their parlors, you know, they had coal fires and, you know, and it was dark and blah, blah, blah. You know, so that's why that became called the cast iron plant, because really nothing could kill it. So.
And now they have variegated types and so forth. Yeah, that are really quite attractive.
Yeah, I have Milky Way, which has like speckles on it, like a star, starry night. And then I have a variegated one I just got this last summer. I love it. It's like striped variegated.
Oh, beautiful. Okay, well, and so there's how many plants did you feature in the back there? I've forgotten now.
I think there's 50.
50 of them, yeah, and with some beautiful photos to go along with it. So that's what you can find when you look in Lisa's book, Grow in the Dark. Lots of good information about choosing and caring for low-light houseplants. Let's take another call. Philip in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I'll tell you, I've got an African violet that I've managed to keep alive just barely. And the reason I know that you can buy African violets just about anywhere, but what makes this plant so unique is when my brother was little, he brought home a leaf that fell off one at his school, and my mother turned that leaf into this plant, and that was 55 years ago.
Whoa.
So I really am trying to keep this plant alive. I have transplanted it into a planter that you can water from the bottom, because I know you aren't supposed to get the leaves and such wet. But my biggest question is on fertilizing and sunlight aspect. Is do you want direct sunlight or indirect? I mean, if it was a begonia, I know what to do. But African violets, I'm sort of lost on.
Well, if you can grow begonias well, I'm impressed. My begonias don't always look that great in the house. But if it should grow where your begonias are growing. You know, it should do well there. So I think in the house, the east window is the best, or a little ways back from a west window. No south. North, it might do okay, but you probably won't get a lot of flowers. And by the way, it's kind of like an old wives' tale. You can get the leaves wet. I take mine to the sink and I wash them, but I don't use cold water because that will mark the leaves up. And I make sure that there's no water sitting in the crown when I get done. So, because they have those fuzzy leaves and they grow outside somewhere in Africa and they get rained on. So it's okay to water them, just not with cold water. So, and then give it, you know, don't overpot it. I don't know what you have it potted in right now. You said you've repotted it. It really doesn't need to be in much bigger than a 4-inch pot. And they like shorter pots, like an azalea pot, because they don't have really, they have shallow root systems.
Okay. Right now what I have it in is, I used to have it in an African violet pot, but it got so big that the leaves were dragging the ground and dying. And so I transferred it into a bigger pot that you water from the bottom. Because I just figured that would be safer for it, for me, in case I overwater it, that it would just suck up what it needs.
That's a good thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it's doing good. You're just not getting flowers, is that?
Oh, no, it gets flowers. They sort of die rather quickly, and it's in a south-facing window. So when the sun's out, it gets sun all day. And I just wasn't sure if that was safe for it.
No south.
No, yeah, that's the worst direction.
Yeah.
Okay.
Funny, if you look on my blog, you'll find a, if you type in African violets to look, there's one where we had an African violet that someone had on the welcome center at our church, and it was about 6 feet from a south window, so it was doing great. I watered the plants at the church. There's only a few. And I came back the next week, and it was like all the leaves were all burnt and brown, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. Well, someone thought that it should do better on the south windowsill, and it burnt the plant. I mean, I had to rip all the leaves off except for the middle ones because they were so burnt. So your plants can even get burnt from the sun inside your house. So, yeah, they don't want to be in the south sun.
East is best.
Best, yep.
Yeah, for sure. There you go, Philip. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Jake,
impressive, 55 years old. That's awesome.
Yeah, I would be propagating some new ones off that one, like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, and hand it out. That's very cool.
Yeah, you want to, just in case the worst happens, then you've at least got, something from that plant.
Correct, definitely.
And is that hard to do for an African violet, Lisa?
No. We have I'm an African violet club here in Detroit, and we have every January is our meeting where we have a leaf exchange. So everybody brings in leaves from their plants, and boy, I'll tell you, it's cutthroat. No, it's not cutthroat. We're all very nice people, but some people really know what they want. I want that leaf. And you just, you know, you cut the petioles, which is the stem of the leaf, about an inch long, and you cut it on a slant. And then I use a pencil instead of just shoving it in the soil because that could damage the end. Make sure we use a pencil or a, you know, a chopstick or something to make the hole, and you kind of put it in on a slant, like a 45-degree angle. And then it can kind of lean against, if you want, it could lean against the edge of the pot into moist potting soil, African violet soil. We like that, you know, something very well drained. And in about 6 weeks, you should have little babies growing.
Yeah.
Very easy.
There you go. Do that, Philip. You want to save that that plant or its offspring. There you go.
Like, I'm big about babies. I give out pieces of my great-grandmother's fern to people. And my daughters have one, and you know, it's nice to pass it around to nieces and nephews.
Yep, there you go. Thanks, Philip. Appreciate it. Jake and Madison, we'll go to you. Hi, Jake.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to bring up, there's a plant I bought a few of over the summer, and I believe the tag in the flower pot was airwave ferns, but I did a little research on Google and found out that it was a variety of a bird's nest fern.
Yes, crispy wave.
And yeah, crispy wave. They are phenomenal plants. They're very crunchy and always very kind of bright. And I was caught off guard a little bit by the early bitter cold and 3 a.m. snowstorm that we had in October. And I was out that night and dug them up from the outdoor planting bed. I had just put them in the ground outside, and they did really well in the shade. But I dug them up and put them in a bin, and I've been too busy with side jobs and work that I've still got them in the same bin and have ignored them for the last couple of months in the same bin. I don't have any more light than the light that filters through my honeycomb blinds that are down all the time. There's hardly any light in the hallway where they're still lingering in the bin. And they are doing just great.
So they were outside when it was 30 degrees and got snowed on and they lived?
They didn't get snowed on, but it was pretty bitter cold. By the time I was surprised that they hadn't turned into frozen spinach by the time I had actually dug them up because it was really bitter cold.
Maybe because they were in the ground, so they weren't, you know, the pot, the roots really didn't get too cold. Maybe that's why. That's pretty impressive. So now they're in the house.
Yeah.
They're still doing well.
Yeah, and I've been ignoring them. All I did was I dumped a little water on them occasionally, but I feel like I should just leave them in the bin. But I want to bring up bird's nest ferns and see if you could address those.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you know more about them than we do because I think mine would already be dead if I had ignored it for 2 months. And, you know, because I have them, I finally put my bird's nest. I have three different kinds of bird's nest ferns. I have that crispy, well, and maybe I have more than that, but I have crispy wave, and then there's one called Leslie, and there's one called Christy. They all have different shaped fronds. And I had to put them right by the sink. You know, I have lights under my cupboards, my plants are on the counter. My husband hates that. You can't see the counters because they're covered with plants, too. Everything's covered with plants. So I can remember to water them because they dry out, you know, and then I've killed many a crispy wave. Many of my crispy waves are crispy. And I'm impressed that yours almost froze. It's in the house. It's behind honeycomb blinds, and it's doing fabulously. Like, you're asking the wrong person. I should be asking you what to do.
Wow.
And I also have one in a terrarium. That one's doing well, too, because it has lots of humidity, and it lights up, and it's doing well.
Well, sounds like, Jake, you're pretty lucky. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, as he was talking, I was thinking about the Christmas cactus I had in one of my offices. This was quite a few years back, and I just sort of, I inherited it from somebody else, and the person who had the office before me, and I would forget to water it. It would get cool at night. And that thing flowered. It was, I'm telling you, benign neglect worked.
You know, plants flower more when they're under stress because they're trying to survive and make more of themselves.
Well, that Christmas cactus was probably mad at me then because...
Yeah. I better make a lot of seeds because I'm not going to make it.
Oh, man. So, well, sometimes it's a little neglect can turn into a good thing. You had a really interesting sidebar in your book about how a houseplant becomes a houseplant.
Yes, that was so cool. I got to talk to when I went down to there's a tropical plant show in January, and I went down to Costa Farms because I talked to the man who really is the plant hunter, and he was talking about how he goes and he looks for certain things. We got to see some plants that were not even out yet. We had a cone of silence. It was very interesting. So then I called him back and I'm like, hey, let's find out how does this become a houseplant? How long does it take? It was very fascinating.
It was fascinating to me. And how many do you have to have stock to release a plant to the market?
Let me see. What did he say? How many it was?
Well, that's what, I found that interesting. I don't remember. I think it depended on the plant.
Yeah, it did. It does depend on the plant. Probably a lot. Thousands. I mean, think of all the stores in the world that get those plants, or in the United States, and how many they would have to have.
And the whole point about the fact that it can take 4, 5, 6, 7 years once you discover a plant or find a plant to get it to market could be 8 years even, I think.
4 to 8 years. That's right.
So that's an amazing, I love the little sidebars in your book. This has been really a lot of fun. I want to thank you, Lisa, for taking time to be with us. I really enjoy your book, and I hope you sell a whole bunch of them. What's your blog, by the way?
It's www.thehouseplantguru.com.
Thehouseplantguru.com. Lisa, thank you again.
Thank you so much, Larry, for having me on, and you have a wonderful holiday.
You as well. Thank you. Lisa Eldred Steinkopf is the author of Grow in the Dark, How to Choose and Care for Low-Light Houseplants. She mentioned her blog, and remember our blog, too. Just go to WPR.org/Larry and see what's there. There's always lots there. I want to remind you again, next Tuesday, Santa Claus lands a sleigh on the roof of Wisconsin Public Radio and comes in with an elf to talk with all of the children in Wisconsin and really the Midwest, because we get calls from every state around us. Oh, this has been a lot of fun. Tomorrow, or I should say on Monday at 11, we'll talk holiday collectibles with Shirley Bauman. That's Monday on the Ideas Network. And in the meantime, I hope you'll stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for listening to Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller.